Welcome back to the Big Sports Breakfast. Adam Pengilly from the Sydney Morning Herald, not too far away. Just some news in cricket. Clarkie's back on Friday, by the way. He'll be joining us trackside at Rosehill Gardens on Golden Slipper Eve. And Cricket Australia, our men's side, will not play Afghanistan in three T20 internationals in August, despite the fact that we played against them, by the way, at the World Cup in India. The Cricket Australia, well, the governing body, has made the call to support human rights for women and girls in Afghanistan, which, of course, Afghanistan being once again Taliban-ruled. So Cricket Australia deciding not to play that series. Look, it's only three T20 internationals. I mean, it naturally hurts Afghanistan cricket, but Cricket Australia doesn't want to be seen at all to be supporting that regime. We saw a story yesterday in the Sydney Morning Herald about the venue order for the India series later this year. And so the first test, according to the Sydney Morning Herald, will be in Perth against India next summer. Then Adelaide will have the second test, assuming that's day-night. Brisbane, the third test. It's an interesting slot for the Gabba test, the third test. And then your traditional slots for the MCG on Boxing Day and the SCG just early into the new year. So first test in Perth, second Adelaide, third the Gabba, fourth MCG, fifth SCG against India next summer.
All right, so they've moved them around because it used to be the Gabba.
Yeah, it has been a while
Perth, since the Gabba. Then Adelaide, wasn't it? Adelaide used to be just before Christmas, didn't it?
Yes.
Was that second or third test?
Perth, Adelaide would be sort of, it'd be one of those two, sort of second or third. Usually Adelaide second, Perth third, actually. And then you'd have Melbourne, Sydney.
So they're going to have probably school holidays up there at the Gabba?
Yeah, well, that's it. So they just get sort of right at the edge of school holidays starting in mid-December.
So I reckon there'll be decent crowds up there. Possibly. Perth is the big worry in Perth.
The crowds in Perth have been average.
Yeah.
But they get a million to their, you know, they love their Perth Scorchers over there. They can't get enough of them. I mean, they're just so.
But you've got India in England coming up.
You remember all those games.
If they can't draw crowds to these Test series, they're never going to draw crowds to Test match cricket.
This summer and next summer's next summer. England.
Yep.
Next summer, India. The summer after that's England. So there you go. We've got Adam Pengilly. Morning, mate. How are you?
I love it when you get wound up about T20 cricket, Nido.
Seriously, I can't, like, you know, we're going to be talking about the Perth Scorchers winning the BBL for the next 30 years. It's going to be so fun.
Why do you think they love the Scorchers so much?
It cracks me up, mate. I have no idea. They think they are the great, like, you only have to see their crowd numbers. Like, they are huge.
I reckon they just want to be their own country, don't they?
I don't get it. I never will. But anyway, good on them. Oh, the Scorchers. The Golden Slipper Barrier Draw. What did you make of it all?
Interesting. Very interesting. I suppose we'll start with Storm Boy. I'm not convinced Barrier 2 is the best gate for him. He's such a big horse. And we saw in the Skyline last start, he didn't quite fly the gates like he has shown in previous starts. So whenever you draw towards the inside, it always runs the risk. If you don't step quickly, you can be crossed by something coming across from the middle or outside gates. And then the dictator's too weak and be in the run. So it's going to be interesting for him because so far what we're seeing in his career, he's almost been like the big kid in the playground, hasn't he? He's been such a physically superior horse. He jumps well. He puts himself on speed and just bullies them into submission, basically. Well, I don't know if that's going to happen there on Saturday. Obviously, Ryan Moore will be riding fairly urgently, I would have thought, and try and go to the front. But if he doesn't quite launch out of the gates, there's always a risk of something will cross him. And the one thing that I found interesting, Meadow, was all his stalemates are drawn around him, basically. Like, Gabe's got horses in barriers 1, 2, 3, 5, and 9. So all of Gabe's horses are drawn towards the inside there. So it'll be fascinating to see how this plays out. I'm not too bad with Switzerland in barrier 7. I think that gives him a bit of time to sort of find his feet, hopefully settle in the first 5 or 6 with a bit of cover. So, yeah, the barrier draw certainly made it a fascinating race. I'm just a little bit worried about the weather today, Mido. Obviously, today was the day where most rain was going to be forecast, so we'll see what comes from that later today.
Will that change where you're leaning at this point if it becomes a heavy track?
I'm going to have to dive a bit deeper, Loz, into the form. As I mentioned yesterday, we just haven't had many of these lead-up races run on really rain-affected going. So we don't really have much evidence to work with these horses on soft going. So we'll see how that plays out. But I'm still at this stage, Loz, just leaning towards Switzerland. I just want to have a bit more time to look at the race the next 24 to 48 hours and just see how the market sort of obviously matures and plays out. But, yeah, I'm still just in his camp at the moment.
I see that there's been some changes in Victoria in regards to some Group 1s. Tell us about that.
Yeah, the big change, Mido, is the Manikato Stakes. Yeah. Now, we know that race for a number of years now has been struggling on the back of the Everest, hasn't been attracting a great field. It's always sort of been run within a week of the Everest. And most of the connections of the best sprinters in the country will prioritise their horses trying to get them ready for the Everest up here in Sydney. And unfortunately, the flow-on effect has been that the Manikato Stakes has had a pretty substandard field for the last few years. They finally made the change in Moonee Valley and decided to bring it forward to AFL Grand Final League, which I think is a sensible option. It should hopefully generate a much better field now being sort of 2 or 3 weeks before the Everest. And some of those connections, I'd imagine, will use that race at Moonee Valley as the last lead-up before they come to Sydney. So that was the big change. They've obviously moved the Moya Stakes forward a little bit, a few weeks as well, to earlier in September. I suppose the one change that's caused a little bit of consternation down there was the Fian Stakes, which has always been the golden ticket race to get into the Cox Plate, has been moved forward as well, moved to the sort of that AFL Grand Final Eve weekend as well, which is going to make it sort of very close to the proximity of the Underwood Stakes. So I don't think the Melbourne Racing Club is overly happy about that. But yeah, some significant changes down there in Melbourne for the spring. Mm,
there was some talk around yesterday whether Craig Williams would keep his ride on Mr. Brightside. What's the latest there?
Yeah, he's kept it, Loz, thankfully. Thank goodness the owners have gone to a vote. Yeah, Craig was a clear majority in winning that vote. I'm sure there were some dissenters within that ownership group who wanted to have Zach Burton on, but I think common sense has finally prevailed. So I don't think Craig's done too much wrong on the horse for a number of seasons now, not just for the last couple of runs, but for a good 2 or 3 years now. So thankfully, he'll keep the ride on Mr. Brightside for the Australian Cup in a couple of weeks' time.
Okay, there you go. Also, just a question without notice. Gillon McLachlan, is it inevitable that he'll be the next chairman of Racing Victoria from your information?
I don't think so, Mido. I was actually chatting to someone about this yesterday, quite ironically. And listen, they've rolled out the red carpet for him. They desperately want him to take on the job. I think Gil's just surveying his options and taking a bit of a back seat at the moment and seeing what's out there. Whether he wants to stay in sport, whether he wants to go and do something in the private sector or not, I'm not too sure. But certainly, the Victorian government down there is desperate for him to take on the job. And I think it'd be a really good appointment, just given his clout and his connections. And not just that, but his background in racing. Like, he absolutely enjoys racing, Mido. He's been involved with it for many, many years in ownership and breeding and whatever else. So he would be a really smart appointment. But I think it's going to take a bit to convince him to take the job on.
What did you make of the halfback changes this weekend for both the Tigers, the Rabbitohs, and of course Newcastle Knights with Jackson Hastings getting punted?
Do you think this speaks to a bigger issue, Loz? Just the amount of pressure that coaches and clubs are under, like early in the season now?
Yeah, most definitely. Most definitely. There's no time to get your team right, and you know you've got to win straight away. Otherwise, if you're a team that hasn't had success, the coach is under pressure. And if you're a high-profile club and you're not winning, all of a sudden the noises are louder at your club than some of the others.
Yeah, I find it so interesting that a lot of these clubs and coaches would have done so many reps in the pre-season. Like, no, there's no doubt South would have done so many reps in the pre-season with Lachlan Elliott as their first-choice halfback. Same with Newcastle, with Jackson Hastings, I would have thought, and even to a lesser extent with Jaden Sullivan and the Tigers. And then all of them within 2 weeks are either sitting on the bench or playing in reserve grade, which is huge calls. Yeah, the Jackson Hastings one is very interesting, Loz, to me up at Newcastle. I would have thought if someone was going to be the fall guy up there at the Knights after the first couple of rounds, it probably would have been Tyson Gamble. I thought they might have played him off the bench and played Hastings and Cogger together. Having said that, I can understand why some people would think that Hastings and Cogger are both very similar players. They're organising halfbacks. But I think the bench is perfectly suited to Gamble with his energy coming on in the second half for 20 or 30 minutes. You can play him in the fours as sort of a loose forward at number 13 or in the halves or even at hooker. So, yeah, that was probably the one that caught me most by the surprise, Loz, to be honest, is Jackson Hastings. And where does he go to? Like, I don't know how Jackson Hastings gets his spot back in that Newcastle team in the next couple of months.
Thank you, mate. Have a good day.
We'll chat tomorrow. See you, boys.
Adam Pengilly there. It is interesting with Jackson Hastings. As someone mentioned earlier, all the, I think it was Ross, when he called up. So he was playing for the Roosters in 16, Manly 17 and 18. Then he's gone to the Tigers in 22. Throw in years at Salford and Wigan amongst all that. And Newcastle, of course. A lot of clubs, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, there is. A lot of clubs. And I think Jackson admitted it. It might have been he did an interview with Denny Wadlock, on Nine News last year, where he admitted his mistakes of the past. And he spoke about, and I'm paraphrasing here, that he it was a not a great teammate, and he let things get to him. And but he'd since changed, and he'd learned a lot by being over there in the English Super League to become a better player, better person. And I thought that was showing. And I thought he was a really popular member, and I think he still would be a popular member at Newcastle. It's just the fact that the coach has decided to make the change and move him. And I think a lot of people thought that Gamble would have been the one that was moved. But they have options. Possibly disagree with Adam in terms of how does he get back in the team for a couple of months. I think if it doesn't work, it wouldn't surprise me.
Happen quickly.
If he pulls the trigger on Tyson Gamble and works the Cogger-Hastings combination. But only Adam O'Brien will be able to answer that, what he's thinking. And he'd be hoping that this combination works straight away, because I don't think there's much between all three of those guys. So if it's not working with Gamble and Cogger, he might make the switch then to go with Cogger and Hastings. So he might be back in the team. But I know he walked away from training yesterday, but he's going to come back today in a lot better headspace and knuckle down and work hard to make sure when his opportunity comes again, he's ready to go.
Because I guess with that 14 jersey at Newcastle, I mean, Jaden Bradley's back, and provided he and Phoenix Crosland are fit, that's probably how they'll use that utility role, I guess, Loz. So you're not going to pick the three halves together.
Yeah, that's exactly
in the same
right.
17.
Yeah. And I think that's the way they will go. And correct me here, I think Crosland was a half.
Yes.
I think he came into grade as a half. So he's got the capability, if something did happen, to shift there and Brayley go into hooker. So he could carry one of those on the bench. But yeah, I think that Jackson's just got to get himself in the right headspace, go back and play good football for however long it is. And when his opportunity comes again, grab it.
Mido, when are the fields out for the guineas, etc. this weekend? Always around, I'll say 11 o'clock, but give or take, and depends on the vagaries of, at times, the Racing Australia website. RacingAustralia.horse is where I look to get those fields when they come out. Around 11 o'clock, I say, Eastern Daylight Time, give or take, for that question. And just this one, morning boys, just wanted to comment on the schedule for the NRL for the first weekend of the championships at Randwick. You have a heap of guys in town for boys slash punters trips, and no footy game in Sydney to even watch on Saturday or Sunday. Even the Friday night games at Olympic Park, they have put the South home game Saturday 2:30 in the middle of the races. Why not put this 7:30? You get a heap of going from the races to the footy. Public transport will be chaos with the footy. And races finishing roughly at the same time. Am I missing something? Is there a reason behind this, or just lack of thought from the real Clarence Carter sending that one through? Yeah, I look, hard to say why. I just don't think they all get together and really ponder all this. You've got the broadcasters have the big say, right?
I was about to say the broadcasters are the ones, and they're not worried about the racing.
Not at all. Yeah. So why we think of that for our own practicalities, and I totally get where you're coming from. The broadcasters pick their games in various orders in the way it's written in the contract between Channel 9 and Fox Sports, and they go from there. And as Loz said, they're not then going, well, hang on, the races are on. We've got to look after everyone who wants to go to vote.
No, that'd be
just doesn't work like
doesn't
that.
Doesn't work like that, Mido, no. Well, we'd want it to work like that, and it suits us. All they're worried about is how do we get as many eyeballs as we possibly can on our game on television.
Yeah. But certainly take your point. Yeah. Loz and I were just reminiscing about Master O'Reilly and its jockey Vlad Djurić winning the Caulfield Cup in 2007. And as I say, a very good morning to Mitch Menett, Sky Racing's Gold Coast caller. Mitch, morning to you, mate. And we've got a new addition to the Queensland riding ranks, and it is indeed Vlad Djurić.
Yeah, g'day, boys. Hope you're well. It's another good addition to the jockey's room in Brisbane, a 17-time Group 1 winner, as you mentioned, winning that Caulfield Cup on Master O'Reilly. Just recently knocked up 700 winners in Singapore, which is some feat when they only race, they've cut their meetings back to one a week now. So he's been terrific in Singapore. And you'll see this over the coming months that there's a number of expat Aussies or Kiwis or even sort of trainers locally based in Singapore that have been there for some time. And, of course, their racing will cease come October. And Macau's the first one that will finish up racing soon as well. So they're in a position that they've got to find new places to start their careers or, keep their careers going. A few of the Singapore trainers locally based are probably going to head across to Malaysia and I think they're investing plenty of money in there. But a lot of the Aussies are coming back home or I know Donald Logan's going back to New Zealand, but Vlad's going to be a welcome addition to the riding ranks. We've seen Damien Thornton be very successful and Robbie Golan, etc. So another good rider. And, on his days, he's obviously, a very talented rider to partner 17 Group 1 winners and all those winners in Singapore.
Mm. What about some Queensland horses, Mitch? Any we can look forward to seeing down here in Sydney that possibly good chances of winning or running well in the big autumn carnival races?
I think Uncommon James is slightly the forgotten horse in the Galaxy on Saturday Laws. He was second in the race last year behind Maria Mia. He was only sort of narrowly beaten in a driving finish, beaten 3/4 of a length. You look at his form. He had a winless sort of preparation in the spring, but he was close up behind Imperatriz twice out of those three runs, 2 lengths off her in third placings to her. He's an Oakley Plate winner, and you're going to get double figures about him. He looked very sharp, as he normally does in his trials. And, providing the barrier draw goes his way this morning, I think he's very much a forgotten horse. You just know what you're going to get with him. He'll run a consistent race, which he has done for a number of preparations at that top level, while a few of them can be a bit hit and miss. Horses like King's Gambit, you just don't know which one's going to turn up. But he'll go around at double figure odds, and the team, Matt Hoisted and Steve O'Day, are quietly confident that he can run a big race on Saturday. He probably wants it, more to a drier track than winter track. A soft six is probably his pull-up range, but, depending on what the weather does today. But I think he's there to give the race a shake, particularly if he can draw a gate this morning.
Something at Doomben today, please.
Yeah, there is one too, Minnow. Quite keen on this filly, Oceans of Energy, lining up in the second race today, number 9. For Matt Dunn, she's been trialling well at Beau Desert and Gold Coast in 2 hit-outs recently. And her form last preparation, she ran in a couple of really strong races at the back end of last prep, including a Reginald Etler behind Arctic Glamour. And she wasn't too far off Jolie Star, who went on to win the 1,000 guineas after that race. So that's good form. That's better than midweek grade. And as I said, her trials have been good enough to get me in. Plus, also on a soft 7 track, she's had 2 wins in her career. One was on a soft and one was on a heavy, so the wet track won't pose a problem for her. I think she's a good bet today. Race 2, number 9, Oceans of Energy.
2.9 at Doomben, $2.90 currently with Tab, mate. You have a good weekend. Thank you.
Thanks, boys.
We've got Mile Jedinak, former Socceroos captain these days, assistant to Ange Postecoglou at Tottenham. Coming up shortly, the Socceroos, by the way, have this World Cup qualifier at Combank Stadium tomorrow night, starting just after 8 o'clock Eastern Daylight Time. And we are very short in the market with Tab. $1.14, in fact, to win. Lebanon is $17 to cause some massive boil over. And the draw is paying $7.50. Just some news in the A-League as well, which we'll be asking Mossy about on Friday. The futures of the Newcastle Jets and Canberra United are in doubt. Now, the A-League chairman, Stephen Conroy, has stressed the competition can't keep propping them up. They simply need new owners and buyers for the club. So Canberra looking to come in the men's comp, of course. So already the women's side is in the A-League women's. But Canberra looking to have a men's side come in, and a consortium of other clubs have taken over the ownership and have the license for the Newcastle Jets as it stands at the moment. And that just can't continue. And on a couple of occasions, it's looked like that sale was on the verge of going through of the Jets, but it just still hasn't happened. So Stephen Conroy saying that their future really is in doubt if they can't find a buyer there at the Newcastle Jets. A massive blow that would be, really. Of course, this is a club that has won championships in the A-League, and it's got a proud history since the A-League, of course, came into being in, what was it, 2005? In its current form. So that is some news of note to we'll be putting to Mossy, no doubt, on Friday morning when we speak to him. By the way, Rugby Australia says the public allocations for the tests next year against the British and Irish Lions are sold out in Sydney and Brisbane, and few remain for the second test of the MCG. There's not many left for the tour matches either. I'm sure the visiting British and Irish tourists will take up a great portion of these as well, but it just goes to show, even at its lowest ebb, these are the strengths of rugby, these tours, and the Lions Tour and the World Cup, of course, to come. The shining lights that somehow rugby must capitalise on. Must, Loz. It's a cannot-fail situation when it comes to the Lions and the World Cup, both on and off the field as well, ensuring that the Wallabies are competitive for those two massive tournaments where so many eyeballs are going to be on them.
Yeah.
Or series end.
Well, I think rugby's just got to the stage, Middo, now where it's just a big event. People are only going to support the big event. I don't know how you try and win back pathways. I don't know how you can win back that against the NRL and the AFL.
And that's what's hard. And because the kids now, Loz, I was saying this to someone the other day, they're turning on the TV on a Saturday night in Super Rugby, Super Rugby days, there were 20, 30,000. It was aspirational. At the moment, you turn it on and you don't see much atmosphere.
I don't know how they win that back.
So that's
even if they start to win, I don't think they'll win that back. But I think at the top end, these tours, people will be interested
big
in.
Time.
Now, whether that's enough to sustain the game and make it more than competitive and compete and win World Cups again, I don't know. But one thing you do know about all sports, you need to be strong underneath. And if you're not, you're going to be hit and miss
big time
on a lot of occasions.
Spot on there. Earlier in the week, Loz, by the way, Luke Metcalf at the Warriors, he signed a 2-year extension. So we were talking about earlier this morning, of course, halves being dropped for this weekend. And he had a lot of injury troubles last year. He was bought over from the Sharks and certainly made an impact in the games he did play. And it looks like that combination with Sean Johnson, even though they're 0-2, that is a real bright spot probably for the Warriors this year, and to have him extend until the end of 2026 is good news for them, and Freddie Lussick as well has re-signed. But they do, it looks like they're going to get Wade Egan back. He was a late withdrawal for that game last week.
Yeah.
And you spoke last week about his importance to that side.
He's a wonderful player. And, you know, who knows? He could possibly play State of Origin this year. He might be a bolter. He's got all the skills.
Lift, go,
he's
work,
got the toughness, and he's playing. If he's playing in a good side that's winning, you just never know. But you talk about depths in halves. They've got four good players that can play in the halves, the Warriors. You've got Luke Metcalf, who's a terrific young player. Sean Johnson, who's coming to the end of his career, but still looks like he's got maybe another year to go if the first two games are anything to go by. And you've got that young... what's his name? Chanel
Harris Tavita.
Harris Tavita. Tamaro
Martin. Yep.
Is another one. So they're guys that are all capable of playing regular first grade. And a couple of those miss out every week. So the Warriors have got some good depth there.
Big task for the Raiders, isn't it? This is just... must win in round three, but this is a big game for the Warriors. Coming home 0-2 at Christchurch, full house against the Raiders. They've got to be winning this game. Again, you talk about prove you want, you're a finals team. You spoke about that with the Knights, considering who's out for Melbourne. Home game for the Knights. If you're a finals team, you're winning that. For the Warriors, it's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah, but what I've seen of the Warriors, their good football in the opening two games is as good as anyone's. But they just haven't been able to do it consistently for long enough. And they've just got to be confident that they can get the job done, which they will be. As long as the confidence hasn't been shaken or knocked around, I doubt whether it would be. Being back home in New Zealand, the Raiders are a tough outfit. But they just do it so well how they're able to create space on the outside. What they do well is they compress with their attack and then they just fan out. Mm. And when Johnson plays square at the line, the defence has to come up and they're trying to cover blokes and, you know, their wingers get a lot of space. So they create numbers on the edge. So the Raiders' defence will have to be on song on the weekend, but it's always a tough place to go and win over there in New Zealand, regardless of where they're running on the ladder. But when they're in good form and, you know, starting to feel as though they're getting a bit of momentum, I reckon. Like from what I saw last weekend, they're progressively getting better. So this will be a tough ask.
Time to talk some football. And, it's going to be a big occasion at the MCG, May 22. Two big clubs coming from the UK in the Premier League. Tottenham will play Newcastle. Now, Newcastle United are also going to take on an A-League men's all-stars side alongside the Arsenal women's side, who will also be playing the A-League women's all-stars as well on this trip. And joining us now, well, he famously captained the Socceroos to the 2015 Asian Cup title, played a lot for Crystal Palace as well over in the Premier League. And at the moment, he is an assistant to Ange Postecoglou there at Tottenham. Great to have him on. Milay Yedinak. Milay, a very good morning.
Good morning, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Appreciate your time and great to see you back in Australia as well. And how crucial do you feel, Milay, it is to have big clubs in Europe or the Premier League in this case, such as, you know, your Spurs, coming and playing games here?
How exciting is it? I mean, even there, just mentioning it, you know, it's super exciting. I think it is. I can't wait to bring the team here, and obviously the support we're going to have is going to be incredible.
And just to, you know, confirm, because people will go, well, hang on, it's only 3 days after the end of the league season, but your players are contracted to come, aren't they? Like they pretty much you'll have a close to a full strength side.
Yeah, absolutely. There are some tournaments in the summer, but those windows don't open until upon our return back to the UK. So we'll have the full complement of players, to my knowledge, and that's going to be, like I said, it's something to get excited about.
Of course, you've got, you know, a fair bit of history working with Ange Postecoglou, both as a player and now in your role as an assistant. How do you describe what makes Ange successful and unique? I mean, how's he got this far in his coaching career, do you believe, Milay?
Oh, listen, I think, you know, there's someone there with a great amount of experience, someone who knows how to win, knows how to transform teams, clubs, and that's exactly what he's been doing throughout his whole journey. And, again, it's not a coincidence, the success he's had.
Mm. And how important is it, Milay, to have the right players buy into what the coach or the manager is trying to bring? Because by the sounds of it, when you speak about people that know Ange very well, he's got a system that he wants to play and you've got to fit into it.
Well, I think it's obviously pivotal if the players are, you know, when the players are, they're the ones ultimately that go out and perform whatever you're asking them to do. And That makes a big difference. You know, we can help set them up, but ultimately, the when they go out on their pitch, they're on their own. And we've been very fortunate. The boys have worked their socks off this season. They continue to do that every single day. And, you know, we've been fortunate at the level of, you know, how they've taken to everything that's been thrown at them, and how they continue to keep improving.
Yeah, it's a tough one, I reckon, this question, Millet, but how do you define success this year for Tottenham?
I think from our perspective, again, what does that mean? Everyone will have a difference of opinion. For us, it's around the process of, you know, ultimately being able to keep improving as a group. We've gotten to this point with 10 games to go, where we're sitting in the table and the amount of points we've got. But again, we're looking at building something here that's going to last, and we're on our way to doing that. We've taken some good strides forward. We'll continue to keep improving, and then at the end, we'll see where it gets us.
Loved Ange's response in a press conference last week when he was asked about sort of plastic fans. And it made me think, gosh, you know, for people such as yourself and Ange, I mean, how difficult has it been? Or tell us about sort of how much harder it is for even an Australian to earn the respect and trust of football identities and fans over there in the UK.
I think it's something that, you know, I'll give you my example. I think doing it as a player, it's something that you do your whole career, really. I think that's what sort of sets you apart when you think about that and exactly that. And I don't think it's too different to the way that Andrew's, you know, he's approached it and the way he's sort of navigated through it. Again, it doesn't stop. You keep doing that. You keep, you know, ultimately you have what you deem a success, and you keep pushing forward in order to try and achieve that. But again, you know, when people look at the way the body of work that's been done throughout careers and, you know, playing or coaching or otherwise, they'll see that at their own different stages, and then that's totally fine as well. As long as you're consistent with where you want to try and get to and you keep pushing forward, then ultimately I don't think anyone can stop you.
Describe what you've learned, Millet, working at a club of this magnitude and how that's helped you.
For me, it's been, you know, it's been a tremendous learning experience so far. I think, you mentioned there about the size of the club, the supporter base and, you know, what it's like from day to day, week to week. I think that the environment, the working environment for me has been an absolute pleasure to be a part of and to sort of being able to support that and be a part of that every day. And I know, Laurie, you'd know all about high performance and what it's like on the day to day. And, you know, that sort of stuff, that's the stuff you sort of thrive into when you sort of come from a playing background and when you're involved in sport. And this is, you know, ultimately where how I sort of envisage, you know, myself being at my reaching, you know, the ultimate sort of fullest potential is being in those environments and being able to help influence that.
Yeah, and then knowing Millet is one of the big clubs. How does it compare to, say, a Crystal Palace or an Aston Villa when you were there sort of playing?
I think just obviously it scales up. Again, those clubs at those moments for me were massive, to be honest with you. But again, you're dealing with, we've got, you know, big supporter base all around the world, global supporter base. And, you know, we've already witnessed that. We were fortunate enough to bring the team over in pre-season. And, I mean, we had 6,000 or so fans come to our open training session. We've got 11 official fan supporter clubs in Australia, two of them based in Melbourne. And again, we look forward to getting in front of them again. And that's ultimately, you know, the scale, because everywhere you go, you're supported. And, you know, those clubs, the ones you mentioned, my previous employers, that they're just as big as well in terms of that support base. But this is something else.
Watching from afar, do you keep, you know, a bit of tabs on the Socceroos as we head into these World Cup qualifiers, obviously coming out of a, you know, really good performance in the 2022 World Cup under Graham Arnold? The women, the Matildas went well last year. I mean, what do you make of sort of the overall picture of our national sides watching from afar?
Yeah, absolutely. I think obviously great success at the World Cup last year was obviously a huge event. I'm glad to see that it got the recognition and the support from everybody, which is really, really encouraging. they continue to perform and keep, you know, the men's are the same. You know, the Socceroos are in town, which, again, I've no doubt that everyone will get behind them tomorrow night in their trip. And I think from my perspective, it's, you know, the expectation with the game being at home is 3 points.
And how long are you home for, mate, and when do you travel back?
Well, there's a group of staff going today, and then I've got a couple of extra days, so I'll enjoy those extra few days with seeing some family and whatnot.
Well, we look forward to seeing you back here as well with Spurs against Newcastle in May, mate. And thanks for your time this morning with us.
Brilliant. Thanks for having me on, guys.
There'll be lots of reaction to the Golden Slipper Barrier draw today on Radio Tab. We've got Steve Hewlett. Steve, good morning.
Good morning to you, Jerry. Good morning, everyone.
What have we got on today?
Laurie Mayfield-Smith's going to join me in the first hour. What about his horse on the weekend? He was 100-1 on debut at Durban. He box seated and won. And on the weekend, going up to class one at Eagle Farm, he started $18. So if you've been backing him, you'd be able to get another mortgage, house majestic boom. But there's my system out the door. Long price winners at the next start. Never do it. Yeah, 100-1, he came out and won his next start. But Laurie's got a really talented two-year-old that won on debut that started favourite a couple of weeks ago. It runs on Saturday. So there's plenty of life in the Laurie Mayfield-Smith stable at the moment in Brisbane. He's only got a small team, so he'll join me. And also Mick Kent Jr. There's so many good three-year-olds that Kent and Price have got at the moment that have been winning in recent times. One of them runs tomorrow night called Maybe Dick. And we'll get an update on Amenable and some of the other stars that are heading to some of the carnivals. Not only Sydney, but, of course, South Australia's not far away. Their carnival in Queensland as well. So have a good chat to Mick Kent Jr. And David Fowler's got Kelly Sweeter, Matty Dunn, and quite a few guests as well coming up shortly.
No, great stuff. Thank you,
Thanks,
Steve.
Guys.
Okay, that's coming up on Radio Tab just after the news. And he's Albury bound ahead of the Albury Cup on Friday, of course. Well, the two-day carnival. And it's Big Dance eligible, the Commercial Club Albury Gold Cup, 2,000 metres on Friday. Dave Stanley, morning to you. How are you?
Morning, Mido. Morning, Loz and everybody. Yeah, off to Albury. And the acceptance is through for tomorrow's big meeting and also the big cup meeting on Friday. Well, not the acceptance, but the noms there. The club must be absolutely wrapped with what they're going to experience there on Friday. I know that they've got the big Albury Mile on tomorrow. Yeah. So 50,000 up for grabs there, and then 75,000 in the city handicap. In that city handicap too, you've got Bianco Villano, which we know has secured a spot in the country championship. So Bianco Villano is going to be lining up, as will Tap and Run, as will a few for Mitch Beer. Also Demanding Mo from Canberra for Keith Dryden, Nick Olive, Matt Dale. So a lot of Riverina jockeys and trainers heading to Albury, and Zalago also in those noms. And Tyler Schiller, you'll see in the form guide too over the next couple of days, along with some other Group 1 jocks. So they're going to have a good couple of days in Albury, and you'll catch it all on Sky Sports Radio. And also too, Rose Hill boys, that barrier draw yesterday, gee, the favourites. They've drawn extremely well. We saw, obviously, the price of Storm Boy go to $2.10. Hasn't been a race that the Red Hot favourites have had a lot of success in the last couple of years, especially when they're this short. So there's a little bit of history that Storm Boy's got to achieve, but drawn well. Ryan Moore arrives, I think, tonight. And when I spoke with Adrian Bott yesterday, Adrian said, look, he's more than welcome to come out and have a look at the horse and have a little trot and canter and jump on him, or he can wait till race day. I think he'll be out there at Randwick, Ryan, looking at him, and I'm tipping he'll be with the Coolmore team as well.
Have you changed your mind after your barrier draw yesterday with the horse that you like?
Yeah, look, obviously drawing the car park. I don't like changing, to be honest, Loz. I sort of... I know that obviously, as punters, you can change.
Hayasugi, we're talking about.
Yeah, Hayasugi. But I'm going to still have something on her each way, just because I thought the run in the Blue Diamond was sensational.
She's best back to beat the favourites, Dave.
Yeah.
And she's been well backed each way.
I think the Forgotten Horse, too, to be honest with you, is Lady of Camelot as well. Blake Shin to do the riding there. The pressure that she absorbed in that Blue Diamond, a lot of people were saying to me yesterday, well, if you're going to be, you know, tipping Hayasugi to run well, surely you must think Lady of Camelot will run well. And I do think they're two very smart animals. I think it's going to be one of the hardest slippers in a long time. It'll either be Storm Boy winning, or it'll be something at good odds. So if you do like something away from Storm Boy, you're going to get some value whether you play the fixed odds or you play the tote late, boys.
You told us who's on the show today, didn't you?
Not just yet. So Matty Dunn will join me on the program. We're going to chat with Steve Heatherton from Albury, Annabelle Neesham, Rod Northam, Will Friedman, Mitch Cohen. I'm going to preview Wyong Racing today and also a meeting in Canberra. So we've got two meetings to look at a little bit later on through the day. Some good good horses and races going around at Canberra today. So let's hope that that weather and rain, which I think they thought was going to hit Sydney, it looks like it's gone south. One of those sort of systems that has come from the west, but it seems like it's all going through Wollongong and that those southern highlands, boys. So that rain that maybe was expected for Sydney today might not be getting. And then have you boys seen the forecast for the remainder of the week? I know, Mido, you would have been looking at the weather this morning.
Yes, I have. So it was pretty good.
No, after today, less than 1 mil of rain forecast for the rest of the week day.
On Monday, when we did Punters Postmortem, they were tipping today between 10 and 20 millimetres. And if you look at the radar, it's all gone south. So Wollongong's getting smashed, as I said, Southern Highlands, it's pouring down there. I think if there's a little bit of rain around Canberra as too, so we'll watch that track today. But I think what they expected in Sydney today has gone south, so that's great for us. And then tomorrow, no rain, and then on Saturday, maybe the chance of a shower, but that's going to, you know, a lot of people would have been thinking, oh, after last week, oh, we're going to be dealing with a really, you know, really rain-affected track here if this rain arrives. Well, it hasn't. So that's going to be great. And we might get a track update on Friday morning from Sean and the team and find out exactly how it looks to play, boys. Have a good day.
Good on you, DS.